Okay, then it's not Rashi.
No.
So is it Joshua?
This is Joshua, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So who's gonna...
Who can read?
Who would like to read first?
Who can read?
Everybody can read.
No, some people don't seem to be able to read.
Well, we get tired and then, yeah, our words start fumbling. Go a good long time. I'll read.
Okay.
Your bird's on the floor.
No, he's not.
Oh, he is too. Oh, that's the dog.
That's the dog. She's just pretending to be a bird. She made you see that.
Okay, so I'm going to catch myself up here. 167.
Or hide here.
No, no, I want the digital.
Yeah.
It's somewhat inconvenient.
The shaman story. Yeah. We did that one on Monday evening.
Okay, got it. Okay. Do we have a hot mic here?
Right there in front of you.
We do. Okay, skipping over to stories. Page Emergent Life 167. What's the, looks like passage 33. Quite a few years ago, an elderly Alaskan native named Joshua, declaring he was a Christian shaman, attended our meetings in Fairbanks, Alaska. And this is his story. His great-grandfather was a native shaman, and his family had been shamans for generations. However, because his great-grandfather carried on the family tradition, he was considered to be a lesser shaman, while those who were personally called to be shamans were considered to be greater shamans. Though his great-grandfather was a lesser shaman, he was entrusted with the great shamanic task of guiding the sun on its long winter journey and recalling the sun at the end of winter. In addition, he had to perform the rituals that, during spring and summer and fall, would call the sun to rise every morning. This had been a family responsibility for a long time. One day, many years ago, in early summer, strangers arrived at great-grandfather's village, and the traditional sittings began. The natives have a process of sitting with one another, and while sittings occur, primarily with village members, they also occur with strangers and visitors. Villagers would frequently sit with each other and watch without saying a word. Then, as each person felt the sitting was complete, he or she would stand up, thank the others for the wonderful conversation without saying a word, and quietly leave, and even tell the whole village about the grand conversation they had enjoyed. On this summer morning, the strangers...
Of the villagers.
On this summer morning, the strangers and the villagers are sitting with the missionaries, and after a while, the villagers thank the missionaries for their wonderful information, and without a word, the villagers quietly left one at a time and went around the village telling others about their conversation with the missionaries. When the sitting was complete and only his great-grandfather was left, the missionaries asked him what his duties were in the village. After his great-grandfather spoke of guiding the sun on its winter journey and directing its safe return, and then calling it to rise every morning, the missionaries asked what would happen if tomorrow he didn't perform the rising sun rituals. Great-grandfather assured the missionaries that if he didn't call the sun, it wouldn't rise in the morning. And of course, the missionaries laughed heartily and promised that if he would stop
calling
the sun for just one day, their God would raise the sun on time and in a spectacular way. Great-grandfather decided that one day without sun in the summer wouldn't hurt anything, so he decided to test these men and their God and stop calling the sun to rise the next morning. He would show them. great-grandfather planned to show these strangers to the powers his god had entrusted him with, and he didn't perform the sun-calling ritual the next morning. The missionaries were delighted with great-grandfather's decision because they wanted to show him the power of their god, and they had a surprise for him. For the missionaries knew of a forest fire east of the village where they had come from, downriver. And since the wind was blowing out of the west, the villagers didn't know about the fire. The next morning, without great-grandfather's sun-calling ritual, the sun rose as usual. Well, not entirely as usual, for because of the fire, the sun was bright red, which astounded everyone, and it was just as the missionaries had predicted. "How do you know these things?" great-grandfather asked the missionaries. And their only reply was a smug little answer that their god was obviously more powerful than his god. And when the bright red sun rose again the next day, and the next, without great-grandfather performing the sun-calling rituals, great-grandfather, a native shaman with centuries of tradition behind him, seriously considered the missionaries' advice to answer their call and convert to Christianity. After all, great-grandfather reasoned, their god is truly more powerful than ours in bringing back the sun without the ritual. Besides, he considered, by answering the call, I will become a greater shaman of this greater god. Well, you might say, the deed was done. The baptism was complete, and Joshua's great-grandfather became a greater Christian shaman. And though his family agreed to carry on this new tradition in order to become greater shamans too, each one had to be personally called. The man who came to our meeting had left the village to follow his Christian god, but he came to the meetings because our talks were a little like the sitting conversations he had in the village with his family and friends, and with his old gods. And he missed his old shaman ways. He wanted to know how he could live his old shaman beliefs and behaviors in the city, with people who didn't know of traditional native ways or understand them. This was during the period following the settlement of the Native Claims Act and the beginning of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Joshua usually sat silently in our meetings and left quietly after thanking everyone for the delightful conversation, though he had not said a word, and no one had spoken to him. This was our weekly ritual with Joshua. Some people in our group, not knowing he was a lesser shaman, seeking his calling to become a greater shaman, and not understanding native ways, laughed a little behind his back until we explained about sitting and the ways of a greater and lesser shaman. In the ways of a greater and lesser shaman, the lesser image of yourself and life is the traditional image of becoming, and the greater vision is your answering the call of your eternal self and stepping quietly away from the traditional beliefs designed to keep you in place as society or villagers and language dictate. Just making sure I read that. Language beliefs and ways have completely dominated and controlled your conversation with life, your manners and behaviors in life, and your relationships with everyone and everything. It is time to get up from your sitting with language, thank language for the interesting conversation, and answer your call to take up and follow greater ways. Have you ever considered that your motivation to become, your desire for acceptance and recognition by family and friends, your hope for true intimacy with lovers, and the appeal of acknowledgement and admiration through fame and success are all callings? Callings to be a greater shaman and live your everyday life as a greater shaman? The man who came to our meetings was seeking his personal calling so he could move from being a traditional lesser shaman and be a greater shaman. Are you willing to do the same in your life? If so, then it is important to realize that seeking your calling will not succeed. You must prepare yourself to recognize and answer your calling. When it comes, as surely it will, do not try to cause a calling. The man who came to our meetings, a lesser Christian shaman, had become so caught up in the Bible words to seek first the kingdom of heaven and all things will be added unto you, that he was seeking his greater shaman self, so all he desired would be added to him. Don't make the same mistake and try to make your eternal self come alive. Allow it to come emergently alive through everything you do. Hang on a second. Sorry, I just lost the page. Hang on a second.
71.
Thank you. Okay. 171. Are you beginning to understand how, at this stage, trying to create or compose your desires, or doing things to consequent what you desire, like Joshua, a lesser shaman, was doing, limits your being and living what you truly desire, which is being and living your eternal self as a greater shaman? To be and live as a greater shaman, promise and offer the universe and everyone you would promise and offer to yourself eternally. As you would promise and offer to yourself eternally. In other words, show the universe and everyone in it what they can be, what they are truly living. Are you willing to call the universe and everyone in the universe to themselves? You can prepare yourself to recognize and answer your calling to be a greater shaman by being the silent call through offering for others to their promised greatness. In language, you've heard to do unto others as you would have others do unto you. However, in shamanic offering, you have as you promise and offer, and do to yourself not as you do unto those you would have done unto you.
Do unto you.
And do to yourself not as you do unto others. Oh, no, sorry. And do to yourself, not as you do unto those you would have do unto you. Sorry about that one. During our private conversations, Joshua told us more about his great-grandfather and the missionaries, and how by carrying on the tradition of his great-grandfather's becoming a greater shaman, he had become a lesser shaman. And he wanted to be a greater shaman in his own right, and he was seeking his calling. But in following the Christian tradition, he had been told, wherever you go and whatever you do, thank God, for all talents belong to God. The way of man is not within himself. And finally, his most desperate words were, and they told me that the worst folly of man is that he trusts in his own resources. And he was terribly concerned about his priest telling him that your impressions and feelings are no sure evidence that you are being led by the Lord. And in this, he felt completely drained, because as a shaman, he had been taught to trust his impressions and feelings. What am I to do? He wailed. Then added, and when I told them about being a shaman by tradition, people in the church declared that many Christians never get beyond their sins, and he wanted to know if being a shaman was really a sin. In response, we told him of another shaman who was told he would suffer eternal damnation if he didn't believe in the Lord and faithfully follow him and accept Jesus Christ as his personal Savior. And when the shaman asked whether or not he would have suffered eternal damnation before the missionaries arrived, they replied, no. Of course he would not have been damned, because he had not heard the great news of the Lord they were bringing to him. At which point, this greater shaman jumped up and shouted, then damn you for what you've done to me. And when our friend asked about healing and spiritually restoring and laying on of hands, because the tradition he followed was as a healing shaman, we asked if he could see his healing as deliverance from their illness of a lesser life, and deliverance to the well-being of living a greater self in life. He just smiled broadly, thanked us for sitting, for the sitting, and quietly left. So we didn't get the opportunity to ask. In the past, kings and rulers proclaimed that their authority and privileges came from God. And in one form or another, all beliefs follow this same pattern. Are you willing to prepare yourself for being called by knowing and revealing that your authority and privileges of deliverance come from the offerings of your greater shaman self? Now, back to great-grandfather shaman, who took up the missionary's challenge not to perform the sun ritual. And when the sun rose as usual, the missionaries proclaimed their god most powerful. For among other things, their god promised to reward the faithful with life after death. When you think about it, weren't the missionaries false? For they challenged great-grandfather's sun rituals, but they kept their god's promises hidden in the smoke of a forest fire. And their god's promise of life after death was certainly challengeable as a great offering simply because you have to die to collect. As a lesser shaman, great-grandfather guided villagers to lit... As a lesser shaman, great-grandfather guided villagers...
Anybody want to summarize all of this?
So far?
Yeah. You were born as a lower being.
Which is a lesser shaman.
Which is a lesser shaman because you follow the tradition.
Yeah.
And you continue in life as a lesser shaman, living yourself as a loner being, trying to reach a calling that will enable you to live greater than as a loner being. And your whole life is in that struggle.
And
all of Christianity keeps you in that struggle.
You can't cause yourself to become a greater shaman. You have to live it.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
As a lesser shaman, great-grandfather guided villagers to live their greater self. But unfortunately, since he didn't challenge or test what the missionaries declared their god promised, it seemed he couldn't now stop praying and being faithful to test this new god. To see if he did quit praying and being faithful, would his problems and illnesses and those of the villagers continue or just go away on their own? Great-grandfather had been taught, and he taught the villagers, that they could test their greater self. And this is what he told them to do. Live the greater shaman you are through offering the fullness of yourself to every situation. And let that feeling and impression fill every aspect and corner of yourself and life. Then, one day, like getting up from a sitting, stop relating to being and living as the greater shaman you are. And stop offering. Continue your old self and life. If you don't immediately feel lessened, then being and living your calling as a greater shaman is not for you. Return to your old ways. Great-grandfather always dramatized these last words. And then he continued quietly, almost reverently, if you do feel lessened, then you immediately know just the beginning of what living your greater promised self through offering is all about. And you will be able to test this promised self and life, and know whether it is for you. If you feel the need to challenge these things, do so in this way until you have no further need or desire to change. As we tell this shaman's tale, are you sitting with me? Are we having a wondrous conversation with words not spoken or written, with images?
Now you see, that's what I'm trying to talk about. In all of these words, all these stories. That's what I'm looking for. What are we talking about that we're not talking about? If you don't make the association, you miss the whole point. So I'm going to tell you the stories to make it easy to make associations. So you have to listen to the stories to make the association, not just as stories that don't mean anything. most of the stories I've told over the years, you've just blown them off.
No, I like the stories. The stories make it easier to...
It portrays your whole damn life and every struggle in it. Trying to become a greater shaman. But you don't believe it. Let's assume that it's true and follow the story.
Continue. Okay. You have frequently been advised not to listen just to the words spoken, but to the meaning behind the words. If you do that, you will not be sitting, you will be listening only to yourself and to your own conclusions and assumptions, and listening to your own beliefs and
which
words.
Which is exactly what you do.
As you have always done. It is time to listen to these words, if only so we can have a spoken conversation of unspoken words. Do not just sit there in conversation. When great-grandfather had a great image of himself guiding and directing the sun, he was called a lesser shaman. Then, in answering the missionary's challenge, and maybe even to prove his greatness, great-grandfather lost his true greatness of directing and guiding and gave that over to a new god. Is that what you want to continue in your life? Great-grandfather hoped that being called great would be his calling. Are you willing to trade the true greatness of yourself just to be called great? Before answering the missionary's challenge and losing his true greatness, great-grandfather had always declared, "Do not claim any specialness or greatness in your life, and never give up everything you truly desire just for a name and recognition, for you are ordinary as all things are ordinary, offering extraordinary things in extraordinary ways." And then he always added, "Your extraordinariness is in offering. What are you truly offering?" It seems that in an instant, just to show off, great-grandfather ignored his own teachings. Remember, the greater the true image you have of yourself and life, the smaller your problems and illnesses will be. And the smaller your true image is, especially if it is based on a name, the greater your lack of well-being and difficulties will be, and greater your grief, sadness, losses, and disappointment will also be. After many years, great-grandfather learned about offering, not causing, or offering to the gods, as he called it. Of course, this understanding grew out of his not causing the sun to rise, and in this, his life changed, and he truly became a great shaman, not just a great shaman by name. As a result, great-grandfather shaman and his powers, which were not his powers, but were his powers. As a result, great-grandfather shaman and his powers, which were not his powers, but were his powers, became known throughout the interior villages of Alaska. Great-grandfather was frequently called to a village to increase or extend the salmon run, or to bring the moose and caribou, to heal villagers, or to stop the rains and calm the river. But what he liked most of all was teaching others how to guide their inner sun and offer that to everyone and to God. Whenever he was called to a village, he always answered, "For every action of great-grandfather was an answering, an acknowledgement, and an affirmation of his greatness as a shaman." And when great-grandfather answered a call from a village, he never asked about their problem. He only asked for a little place where he could be alone. And though others watched and waited and declared, "But he never really does anything," after a few days, the unspoken problem was relieved. The fish were plentiful in plentiful in the fish wheels. The moose and caribou returned, villages were better, and the rain stopped such that the rivers calmed down. And people who followed great-grandfather's example and learned to offer extraordinary things in unnoticed ways were frequently relieved of unspoken problems and difficulties and advanced in unusual ways. The villagers declared that the greater great-grandfather was, the lesser were his actions, yet the greater were his doings. And the villagers marveled at great-grandfather shaman's teaching that awakening a child to see and experience his empowered self in dreams and helping that child grow up in realization of that empowered self would yield an adult of superior intelligence and fineness of extraordinary distinction, with great physical endurance and tremendous vitality of spirit. Unfortunately, abandoning their old ways, too many villagers did not sit with great-grandfather shaman. They tried to create great tasks and dramas in life to prove they were worthy of being called great. But in struggling to be called great, those villagers gave away their greatness. Like great-grandfather, as you live your empowered self through offering, others will certainly marvel that you are able to accomplish extraordinary things in inconspicuous ways through ordinary efforts. If even one word of what we've said or left unspoken for you to sit with finds a place within you, is it not reasonable to assume there may be a dormant empowered self waiting for you as well? Besides, you are a practical person, aren't you? Then consider this guarantee, that it is greater than a money-back promise. If you are not satisfied with your empowered self, you can have your old self and life back, along with your old problems and illnesses. So what do you have to lose? Also, if you are unhappy with offering as a greater shaman, you can forsake everything and continue struggling to cause what you desire, and see all of that become meaningless in the end. However, a word of caution: living with your greater self through offering does not make you supernatural, for you will not be able to move mountains, create world peace, banish evil, or heal all illnesses. However, living your greater self through offering... Anybody want to take over? Pick up the ball. Thank you.
A word of caution: living your greater self through offering does not make you... Oh, we read that.
I'll just take over.
Read it again.
However, a word of caution: living your greater self through offering does not make you supernatural, for you will not be able to move mountains, create world peace, banish evil, or heal all illnesses. However, living your greater self through offering empowers you to the self you really are. And that is truly miraculous in resurrecting the dead. If you believe what we've said is all a myth, then you must decide whether this myth, as you call it, of offering your greater self in life will help you accommodate yourself to a life of cold darkness without the warmth and comfort of an illuminating sun and to many more years of unknowing, or will it serve as a stepping stone to a self-awareness and realization of who you truly are and what your life is all about. Before the missionaries arrived in his village and things got confusing and seemingly backwards, great-grandfather shaman tried creating his greatness directly, and in that was lesser. Only when he lived his seemingly lesser self in inconspicuous offering ways did he truly become the great-grandfather shaman. Your empowered eternal self is not a mystic or divine spirit calling you or coming to you. You are the divine mystical spirit. Bottom of page 22. There's no number passage I can give you on that.
No.
177.
Seven slides from the line from the bottom in the middle.
Okay. Do not try to rush these things in your life or struggle to cause them or meet challenges. or continue matters essentially as usual. Try to become greater if you must. But carry your feelings and these awarenesses with you until you call yourself to your empowerment through offering. As you can imagine, great-grandfather shaman taught his sons and his son's sons how to be great shaman, but he also taught them to actively wait upon their calling through constant offering, not to go on a quest or search for a sign or calling. He told them that when their calling comes, it might be as simple as not doing what you normally do. And he always reminded them of the day he stopped calling the sun, or as he frequently declared, it might occur while you are doing something that is truly natural, unnatural for you to do, such as setting beaver free from your trap or releasing salmon from your fish wheel. Great-grandfather reminded his sons of the custom of giving gifts to departing guests, and he reminded them that all people and living things are departing guests from this world, and he declared that the only true gift is what the giver wants for himself. Great-grandfather insisted that great men give the precious gift of an awareness the guests had not realized about themselves before, because that awareness just might be the guest's calling, and that would be a grand present. Then he cautioned his sons against denying their own defects and offering criticism as a gift. And of course, great-grandfather shaman frequently repeated the story of his own calling after freeing the sun to go its own way, as he was freeing his sons to go their own way. When I had my calling, he declared, I felt free of time and other limitations of this world, and I wanted to jump around and shout, for I was in a fit of joy at the expansion of my mind and body. Then, the next moment, everything contracted to a single point, and that point was me. Then it seemed my bones no longer supported me, and my mind started to reach out as in a dream for something solid to hold on to. Relax, I told myself, and I let everything pass through me. It was as though I was sensing everything that I had ever, that had ever happened to our people, and I felt completely alone on the river ice, shivering violently. But I knew that no matter what happened, I was completely safe, and I knew I had access to all things in the universe. It was as though, at that moment, I was standing at the center and source of the universe. Then all of this stopped as quickly as it had started, and I was being pulled through the darkness, but strangely, I could clearly see everything around me, even in the darkness. And when it was over, I felt as though I wasn't in my body correctly, and I watched as I walked around beside myself. It was as though there were two of me and my body. Great-grandfather's sons listened carefully to every word, and though they had heard the story many times, they always acted properly surprised and begged to hear more. Oh, it was just a dream, one boy declared every time. And great-grandfather always assured them it wasn't a dream, because dreams happen quickly. But this took several hours, and he could see the dark for several days after the event. He could see in the dark several days after the event. Great-grandfather shaman loved telling the story of his calling over and over, and he reminded his sons that if they have similar experiences, they must remain calm because he wouldn't be there to help them. Of course, great-grandfather didn't tell the small boys about the terrifying beaver who gnawed his bone. As he watched and about being buried alive in ice, instead he assured his sons that though every one of these happenings will seem to be happening to their body, they are to remember that these events are occurring in the darkness of their mind. To free their spirit from the grasp of events and body sensations and old memories.
That's interesting.
Great-grandfather Shaman reminded his sons that their people survived in this harsh land by understanding nature and following traditional knowings and always being practical. Great-grandfather always spit out the word practical as though it was a piece of spoiled salmon. For though he was always practical, he also had a greater sense beyond practical. And though he could see through the darkness of practical and what is, to the sun beyond, which he called forth to enlighten others, to an even greater awareness of practical. Great-grandfather admitted the missionaries had tricked him out of calling the sun, but after his own calling, he found he had a greater sun to call forth and rely upon. Those missionaries took away my sun and gave me an even finer sun in life, he declared. And he promised to reach through the darkness and recall each person's sun. Great-grandfather cautioned his sons that when they begin following their own mind and their own sun along its personal journey throughout the darkness of the universe, instead of living by village and family traditions as he had done for so many years, just repeating the rituals of calling the sun over and over, they run the risk of sensing and living and surely experiencing their own forces, rather than responding to the world around them as others feel is right and practical. Then he would pause thoughtfully and look far away and declare quietly, "But isn't that the point? After all," he reminded them, "this is your life and your calling, and if you live and experience yourself and the world around you in ways that others do not sense or agree with, yet is empowering and fulfilling to you, do you really care if others agree?" I think that's one of the points you are been getting us getting after here. That if we live and experience ourselves in the world around us in ways that others don't sense or agree with, yet it's empowering and fulfilling to us, do we really care if others agree? I think that's a key point. Then he would add, "But be practical. Above all, be practical, for all of nature and the animals in the forest and streams follow the sun cycles. But of course, you can always carry your own sun within you." And he always cautioned them that greater shamans never attempt to trick others or force their knowings and sun on others, as the missionaries did to me. "But I was much younger then," he reminded them, "and I didn't have anyone to guide me." Then he always added, "Be certain you don't judge others for not agreeing with you, even if they accuse you or blame you." Great-grandfather said to his sons, "When you are empowered and guided by your own shaman awareness and the sun within you, you are a full participant in your personal shaman world and no longer a separate observer and reactor to the world around you. So be aware," he cautioned, "your ways will not suit the traditional ways of others around you who faithfully follow and continually experience only those beliefs and ways, and they will speak out and act against you." Great-grandfather was always dramatic and forceful in declaring that though the desires and doings of your body, arising from previous knowings and experiences and reactions, will help you survive as the fox survives, in this, though you survive, you are not truly alive. Oh, traditional beliefs and rituals can even enhance your survival somewhat, but only the shaman's way that arises from future knowings will bring you and others alive. The shaman's way that arises from future knowings? What future knowings?
Got
it. Okay. What did he say?
Direct perception. Okay. And though his sons constantly asked to be told about their future and when their calling would come and how they would recognize their calling, great-grandfather always remained silent and never answered those questions. Do you suppose he was testing them? Great-grandfather constantly reminded his sons that though they had much to tell others about his teachings, they also had much to remain silent about. And following the native custom of sitting, great-grandfather encouraged his sons to sit together in silence and have a shaman's conversation. You see, great-grandfather always answered his son's urgent questions about their calling and their pathway as a shaman, even when they asked again and again. But he answered in sittings and in the meaningful silence between the words and the things not spoken of, but they never listened. Great-grandfather constantly asked his sons, "Will you leave this shaman's lodge to continue living traditional beliefs and ways and the sun cycles? Or will you fill yourself with the light of my teachings and your personal sun to follow the shaman's pathway?" Then he reminded them that a true calling to greatness, beyond being called great, only comes along the shaman's way. In other words, he declared, you must travel the shaman's way in order to be called to the shaman's way. Then he frequently added, to make sure his sons were listening, you have to call yourself to be called. Okay, I heard somebody in that. You have to call yourself to be called. Great-grandfather always reminded his sons that when he called himself to end the tradition of a lesser shaman calling the sun, as great as that was, he called himself to be a greater shaman, living an even greater calling, though he remained silent about this calling. Those of you, he cautioned, who go on a quest or seek a sign to the shaman's trail, or a moose or bear hunt, or those of you who passionately desire shaman experiences and a shaman's calling, no matter how open and sincere you are, you will merely confirm and strengthen your traditional beliefs and ways, which you are seeking to overcome or rise above, and in that you will be weakened and empty.
I don't think anybody heard any of this.
What are you talking about?
The last paragraph. You break it up sentence by sentence and word by word. Nobody understands it.
Well, my mouth's getting a little dry, so I'll try better.
Well, okay, we have all the excuses. Now what?
You want somebody else to read?
Huh?
I'll try again unless you want somebody else to read it.
No, that's fine.
Those of you, he cautioned, who go on a quest or seek a sign to the shaman's trail on a moose or bear hunt, or those of you who passionately desire shaman experiences and a shaman's calling, no matter how open and sincere you are, will merely confirm and strengthen your traditional beliefs and ways which you are seeking to overcome or rise above. And in that, you will be weakened and emptied.
Okay, much better.
Okay. Great-grandfather asked his sons to promise they would honor their traditional beliefs and ways and never struggle against them, but would instead come alive, living their greater shaman ways and calling. And then, strangely, he asked, are you willing to raise the dead? Great-grandfather told his sons not to forget that while their physical survival depends upon everything that walks on the land and swims in the great river, and even upon the sun that circles the land and travels far away in the winter, their being truly alive depends upon their calling and the greater shaman within them, and even the greater realities and spirit in the mind of that great shaman.
Does anybody want to discuss any of this?
I hope so.
I guess not.
No, hang on a second.
Okay, we can just move right along then.
Nope, give him a second. I heard a wait a second. Can you hold this for 3 minutes?
Speak up. Don't just raise a finger.
He asked, are you willing to raise the dead? And I was looking for something in that next passage that would illustrate that, and I seem to have missed it. In raising the dead.
Are you raising yourself as a greater shaman?
And so then you're dead to myself.
What was, but isn't.
So dead
you're
to myself.
Raising the dead, right there.
Right there, raising myself from a lesser shaman that essentially dead to myself to a greater shaman. Okay.
Anything else?
No, fine.
One day, maybe to test his sons, great-grandfather asked, where does the son go on his winter journey? Remembering his previous duty of calling the sons, his sons were certain great-grandfather knew the answer and would tell them, so they made foolish guesses, like behind the mountain, back with the missionaries, beyond the stars, and even to the dark side of the sky. One boy solemnly suggested that the son visited the great shaman spirit. After a lot of giggling and serious frowns, the boys pleaded with great-grandfather to give them the answer so they could show off their great wisdom. Instead, great-grandfather told them to discover the answer for yourself and come to me one at a time over the next 7 sons and give me your answer. Each of you must discover your own answer without speaking to the others. I also want you to tell me how many stars are in the sky. Well, there were a lot of worried looks and frantic actions during the week, including drumming and chanting, dancing, sitting, and asking, private rituals, and moose trailing. And though it was summer, the sweat lodge was kept active so the boys could read the smoke. During the week, 2 of the boys went to great-grandfather and gave their answer and went away sadly disappointed to continue searching for an answer. One boy continued drumming for an answer, while the other took long walks under the stars at night and the sun during the day, hoping to get in harmony with the sun and stars and hear an answer. Each boy was certain this was a special trial or test, and whoever got the call and answered correctly would be the next great shaman. While this frenzy of activity was going on, one son checked his trap line and cleaned and stretched a beaver skin. He helped the women dry salmon, and he cut firewood and stacked great amounts of wood near the door of the lodge. He seemed completely disinterested in the question, or maybe he already knows the answers his brothers decided, which only discouraged them and made their life more worrisome. And they were frantic each evening as the sun went away and the stars came out, and as the clouds moved on, even more stars appeared. And each day, the final moment for answering great-grandfather's questions and receiving his judgment grew nearer and nearer. But of course, one son was not in a panic, or
the
even
one in the lodge.
What?
Skipped a paragraph, a little one.
Oh, okay. Everyone in the lodge was in a panic, which affected everything outside. The wolves howled at night, and the ravens screamed during the day. But of course, one son was not in a panic, or even in a hurry. In fact, he kept doing his chores as usual. Well, maybe not as usual, for he seemed to do much more than usual. On the 7th day, the first 2 sons went to great-grandfather shaman, with little hope in their eyes and heart about the answers they had derived or listened for, or drummed up. And each boy returned with a look of grief and disappointment, while great-grandfather sadly shook his head from side to side. Finally, the last son was summoned from the fish wheel to give his answer, which he whispered to great-grandfather shaman, and this is what the boy whispered. Sir, the sun doesn't go anywhere during the winter. It goes out, just as the fire in the stove goes out, if not properly tended, and has to be relit. I've brought you this grand match so you can relight the sun just as you relight the stove when it goes out. And since the sun appears to be larger than the stove, I have cut and stacked lots of firewood for you to use to keep the sun's fires burning brightly. Great-grandfather smiled pleasantly and accepted the match, and then asked gravely, but how many stars are in the sky? Again, the boy leaned close and whispered, there are as many stars in the sky as there are salmon in the big river. I have counted both. The number is 10 million. Not one more, not one less. And in case you don't believe me, I have brought you this clean beaver skin so you can tally your own count. And with those words, the boy held out the beaver skin he had trapped, cleaned, and stretched during the previous week. Great-grandfather smiled brightly, but said nothing. Did you sit and converse with his unspoken words? If so, then you can certainly answer this question. Who is the next greater shaman in the interior of Alaska? Joshua came to our meetings because despite the name he was given at birth, he was slowly losing awareness and realization of his true identity, and he was seeking his greater calling. Of course, we reminded him that great-grandfather's words, not to go on a quest or seek a calling, that he must call himself in order to have a calling, at which point he told us about his great-grandmother. She wasn't really native, he began this story slowly. She was born in France, somewhere in France. She wasn't pretty, just cute. Well, from the pictures I've seen, she was just barely cute. Yet from the beginning, great-grandmother always proclaimed, without any doubt in her voice, I am the cutest little thing ever. And as she repeated this over and over and told everyone around her, others began believing she was truly the cutest little girl ever. And they told her so. And every time they told her, she smiled brightly and flashed her straight teeth. Her eyes sparkled at their words, which only reinforced their knowing that she was the cutest little girl ever. Great-grandmother said she was giving herself an understanding that if what she truly believed was so, and she fully acted upon that belief, then others, no matter what, could not see her in any other way than that. When Joshua paused thoughtfully, I said that was exactly what great-grandfather's son had done in saying the sun goes out in the winter, and he acted fully upon that by cutting and stacking wood, and had stretched and dried the beaver skin for great-grandfather to count and tally 10 million stars in the sky, and salmon in the Yukon River. Is it I said or I see? That was exactly.
I said, there's quotation marks around it.
Yeah, I just want to make sure. Okay. Then I asked Joshua, haven't you considered calling yourself? Actually, I added, I suspect you have already been called by name, but you weren't listening, and you've been called every day since, in everything you do, but you haven't listened even to yourself. But more about that later. Let's return to Joshua's great-grandmother. Joshua continued, and from her own actions as a child, great-grandmother said she learned and taught others that they too could be just as they truly desired and were willing to act fully upon. In listening to Joshua, I wondered what ever brought her to a native village in the interior of Alaska. Gold, Joshua declared suddenly. She came to our village as a child with her father, seeking for gold. Then, even as a child, great-grandfather said, she got her calling to show the people of our village and in other villages that whatever they felt themselves to be, however they saw and felt on the inside, that was good enough. And when they repeated that and showed others it was true because they lived it, then other people would quickly declare, they are just as they declare they are. But why, I asked, that sounds like a weird calling to bring here. What was going on? Alcohol, Joshua declared sadly. Miners brought alcohol with them, but when they left, the alcohol stayed, and it was destroying whole villages. People needed a greater image of themselves, not an alcohol haze, and great-grandmother knew she could help, but there was also a greater calling she never talked about. So that's what great-grandmother taught, and it was a harsh teaching at times because many villagers disagreed with her and some became violent. Some of my best friends even cursed her and shouted, that's not so. But I've often told others that I am this or that, and they didn't agree. Sorry, I think there's a word there. That's not so. I've often told others that I am this or that, and they didn't agree. And great-grandmother would declare, that's because you didn't even believe your own words. You were just bragging, and you hoped that if you said it enough in one drunk after another, others would believe you. But you didn't believe it either, because you never lived your own words. You just said them and hoped others would accept that. So that's what great-grandmother taught. But I suspect there was an even greater calling in all of this.
It's kind of like your declaration. You have to live it.
Yep, I totally got that. Great grandmother married a villager, had children, and was happy in the interior traveling between villages and teaching these things to everyone who would listen. And great grandmother respected those who disagreed with her. But even those individuals, after they met her and came under her attitude and experienced how she truly felt about them and how and about their ability to actually be and live as they truly desire and believe themselves to be, they would frequently declare, "She says this, and I disagree with her, but she shows in every action that she feels it deeply. And when I sit with her, I know it's true, for she shows it's true. And when she asks what attitude you can carry deep inside, you knew she cared deeply. And when great-grandmother tells you that whatever you want yourself to be, if you genuinely believe and act upon it, you will be that. No, wait, she actually said, you will find you are that. And that's what I find difficult to believe. How can I already be what I want to become?" Joshua stopped suddenly. "Do you think great-grandmother was right, that we already are what we want to become? How's that possible?" "Well," Joshua asked, "what do you really want or want to become? What is your greatest desire?" "Now you sound just like great-grandmother. Okay, I want my calling. I want to be a greater shaman with a calling. Can you show me that I already have a calling? And that I'm already a greater shaman?" "Well, Joshua, would you be willing to continue great-grandmother's teachings?" "Sure, but that would be carrying on a tradition, so in that I'd be a lesser shaman, and there's no calling in that." "Then tell me this, who named you?" "Funny you should ask that. I was told that great-grandmother asked my mother if she would call me Joshua, after great-grandmother's father. Why are you asking?" "You're a Christian shaman, right?" "Certainly." "Would you like to be like Jesus?" "He was a great shaman, wouldn't you agree?" "Of course he was. But though I've never heard of his moving mountains, he did heal people. He raised Lazarus. And I don't think I can do these things, those things. Besides, I don't have a calling to be like Jesus." "Then let's look closely at all these things. Did you know that Joshua in fact means savior and deliverer, and that in Hebrew the name Joshua is identical with the name Jesus? The only difference..." Wait, stop," Joshua interrupted. "What does this really have to do with me? Do you really think that's my calling, to be like Jesus?" "Well, yes, especially since great-grandmother named you Joshua after her father. And in that, didn't she call you by name? And haven't others called you by name every time they called you Joshua, and you call yourself every time you call yourself Joshua in mind? How'd you know I speak to myself as Joshua? I never told anyone that. How'd you know?" "Oh, never mind. That doesn't really matter, because I can't raise the dead." "Don't be too certain about that either. Do you remember when great-grandfather told you the story of his life? He reminded his sons of the custom of giving gifts to departing guests. And he insisted that great men give the precious gift of an awareness of guests, of an awareness the guests had not realized about themselves before, because that awareness just might be the guest calling, and that would be a grand present.
But way to eternal life."
"Do you remember that?" "Of course, and that's what great-grandfather was doing, wasn't it?"
Grandmother
was doing, wasn't it? "But what about Lazarus? Do you remember when great-grandfather asked his sons to promise they would honor their traditional ways and never struggle against them, but would instead come alive living their greater shaman ways and calling? And then you said," he asked, "are you willing to raise the dead? Do you remember that? And you're saying that introducing people to their calling and showing them how to live that is raising the dead to a greater life, greater self and life, aren't you? Well, wouldn't that be true? Okay, so I might be able to raise the dead by calling them to their calling, but I can't heal. Jesus healed. I can't, so I'm no Jesus." Are you willing to consider that healing is really deliverance? I guess so, sure. Deliverance from illness. Yes, and a lot more. For an ancient Chinese text says that the finest healer treats sickness before it occurs instead of after it appears. With that in mind, can you see that Jesus healed after sickness appeared, while you can treat sickness before it occurs by delivering others to their calling and greater shaman self? I'm beginning to see that, sure. But if I carry on great-grandfather's ways and great-grandmother's calling and actions in the bush, that would be tradition. That's not a calling. So I would be a lesser shaman, not a greater shaman. You said that you'd show me that I'm already a greater shaman. That's what I want. And what I want to become, which you said I already am. Yes, there is sort of a tradition in that, isn't there? However, well, great-grandfather told you these things, but you didn't listen or call yourself. Then great-grandmother called you by name, but you didn't listen. Everyone who ever called you Joshua called you by name, but you didn't listen or respond. And since you always speak to yourself by name, you constantly call yourself, but you don't listen or respond even to calling yourself. Joshua of the Bible commanded others to hear the words or calling of their God, which is what great-grandmother did in teaching others to be themselves and live their greatest shaman self they already are. And she called you by name to carry on. So are you willing to answer your call to be and live the greatness of who you already are? After our words, Joshua stood up, smiled brightly, thanked us profusely for the wonderful conversation, without saying a word, and left quietly, taking our gift with him. And unfortunately, we've never seen him since or heard about him. I wonder if he still exists or ever existed. Do you suppose Joshua came to call us, or that we created Joshua as a way to call ourselves? Are you willing to call yourself? Will you call yourself?
Quite a story, huh?
Yep.
It is.
So I was curious, did he tell you guys all that stuff about great-grandfathers? So y'all talked to him extensively.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
We talked about all these things.
Whoa. So Joshua is one of the brothers, the two brothers, who...
No, Joshua is the story.
Joshua is the son of one of those.
Oh, son of one of those. Okay.
Great-grandfather.
Oh, great-grandfather. That's right. Right. Okay. Got it. Okay.
And if you take that to heart, it's really impactful.
I know.
Yeah, well, it's good.
That's your life.
Yep.
Great grandmother did it so easily.
If you live as a lunar being, you're carrying on a tradition.
Like her style.
That's right.
And you'll never get past a lesser shaman.
Right. And it doesn't come to you. You have to do this. You have to live your. You have to create and live your eternal self.
Call yourself or answer the calling when it occurs.
Yeah.
And you're looking for a bright, shiny event. That's where I wanted to get to in the cosmic consciousness, because that's what he was looking for. But then it didn't stay.
Then it didn't stay?
It was just a flash and gone.
I see. Yeah.
And what we're looking at here is something that stays with you, that you live and continue with.
Yeah, I really liked what you said in the early part of the gathering about a slow, consistent path to continual eternal awareness.
Like Joshua.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Because I was always looking for that flash, and it would just stay, I thought.
And it was done through ordinary.
Yes.
Fish wheel.
That was amazing.
And cutting wood. Yeah. And trapping reaver.
Yeah. Roger, what of the tradition that they had when you told of sitting and nobody saying any words, and then after
time? Ask her.
They would do it when I was in the villages.
Oh yes, and are they and it are they communicating with each other at the memory level?
Sure.
I don't know, but I would suspect. But they would just walk in and just kind of acknowledge you and then go over
relationship
and sit
with the natives at the corporate level.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with them at the corporate level. She worked with them on the individual level in the villages.
So it was truly, they were communicating, not just filling time.
Oh, they very much felt that they were communicating. Of course, the story that I like to tell is of the one that came in and sat down, and this was my first experience with this. So I had no idea what was going on. Walks in. Shakes his head, doesn't say a word. They communicate a lot just with facial gestures and the eyebrows and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they just come in and they kind of flash their eyes up like, can I? And go. Mm. And they came in and sat down. And we continued on with what we were doing, and we would ask them and they would just, you know, acknowledge that they were there and just keep sitting there. And then after this one was about an hour and a half later. They got up, they acknowledged, and they left. The next day, I heard about how his person had visited all night with Dr. Missler and had a wonderful understanding, and there was so much that they gained from this sitting, and all these things had gone on. Were you
Marvelous.
Talking? They did not have a conversation that went this way.
Right.
We were just taking care of things, you know, to get ready for the next day, for working on the people and putting our stuff together and relaxing a little bit just to wind down and eating our dinner and stuff like that.
Wow. So the last question, Roger, the last question that's posed in the story is, do you suppose Joshua came to us?
To call us.
Damn, terrible at this. Or that we created Joshua as a way to call ourselves. Would the correct answer to that be yes?
In my mind, yes.
Yes, okay.
Because it asks two questions, so if you say
we
yes.
We called him and he called us.
We still don't know which one.
Yeah.
Oh.
But in any case, Joshua was part of my life for a while.
I would say yes to both of the questions.
Wow. That's about the fourth or fifth time at least that I've heard the story, and I get more out of it every time.
Yeah, it's a very, very important story.
The problem I see is you all keep looking for a similar event. Yeah.
Ta-da!
That turns things on.
Yeah.
And I think that the story it portrays life does not mean anything about a similar event.
I think that what it comes down to is a gentle going to the calling, a gentle coming to greater shaman. It's not just something that boom and you're there, but in everything that you live, you then find out, oh my God, I am that.
If everybody hadn't gotten bored to death with cosmic consciousness, we'd have gotten to discuss that in the beginning. And that's what you're looking for. It doesn't really make any difference. All you want is some Shazam example. Connie was always Shazamming things.
Well, those of us that were raised in the Catholic tradition, we were exposed to biblical characters that were larger than life and greater than this. And so if you were to do anything, you were aspiring to be greater than. And so I think that's kind of conditioned the whole thing of looking for something big.
Why are you excusing it?
Oh, I'm not excusing it. I'm sad about what all I missed because of following that.
Maybe you didn't miss, now it gives you another perspective.
Well, another perspective, but I missed it.
But you're
point
still
of view,
looking for that.
I have been, yes. But not now. I think the way Misty just put it, about this gentle leading myself to my own calling. And it's the way it's described here is that declare it and live it.
But you treat your calling as wording. Got to be
a way
greater in terms of words.
Come again?
Yeah.
Treat it as a wording?
Yes.
What's this mean?
To be called great.
Oh. Okay.
That's what he's looking for, to be called great.
Yeah, that's all part of it.
It's the appearance thing that is the, as we talked about the other day. The accolades, the people praising, the whatever. Well, unless you get all that, are you a greater shaman? Well, if you're going after all that, then you truly are a lesser shaman.
Yeah.
So Patrick, if I know is...
I don't... Can you wait? The... what I... In the story of the son who just went about business, helped with the fish... help with the fishing, help chop the wood, and this and that and the other thing. And then when he came and visited with great-grandfather and just declared that I know where the sun went, it went out, and here's a match. That I remember going through that story when I read it, around the first time. I was disappointed. You know, that again, that's around my...
See,
it had to be something big. I was disappointed. If that was all made up, and he's the one who got it right.
That's what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
Imagination.
That's right. Yes.
And
I see that now.
Direct perception.
Yeah, I see that now, and that's
20 years later.
Better late than never.
Kind of like Joshua.
Yeah.
Didn't recognize his name and his calling.
Yeah.
And I heard in the story, it is an ordinary thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it has to be your ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for the extraordinary, then you're not really living you.
Yeah.
Because if it's extraordinary, then it's not your everyday and it's not you.
Yeah.
But then it's not extraordinary.
Right.
No.
And then all the glory and bells and whistles and accolades and honoring and everybody else acknowledging.
Proclaimed by others that you are extraordinary.
Well, it's the old, if you have to say you are, you aren't.
So, what does that say about great-grandmother then? Because of the two stories, I always really liked hers. Oh, that was very something. I don't know, I liked it. But she told them she was.
She was what?
Cutest thing they ever saw. Cutest
girl
ever.
Is that great?
No, I just
but
kind
that
of
wasn't that
thing.
Wasn't the greatness of her.
She gave that.
No,
gift
it's
to
just
others.
A thing of if you have to tell them you is, you ain't. I guess in this case she really lived it, so she wasn't trying to. She wasn't looking for their approval.
No,
their
she
knowledge.
Told it to herself.
Yeah.
That's what I read here.
True that.
Yeah.
I always liked that one. I thought that was pretty swift.
Brave.
Swift. Clever.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I don't even know if that would show up in the dictionary.
Swift means fast.
Technically, it does.
I tell you when it does.
She simplified it all pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so
quick.
This
yeah, that's what we said. It,
yes,
it,
yes.
It doesn't give the slang meaning of it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
you have to read the last part of the stuff about great grandmother. Let's go back to that last passage about great grandmother.
Okay.
It says certain things that everybody missed.
Oh, well, let's, by all means, do that.
What is that? Go back to the last passage about, or paragraph about great-grandmother. It says some things that we missed, Roger noted. I would like to know, since she's one of my favorites.
She gave the gift.
Where does she start?
Well, now, let's see.
On 186?
Yes, third paragraph.
That's where it starts. 187, it still goes down to the bottom of 187.
Where 187?
That's all the way down. He said at the end of our story.
I didn't say at the end of the story.
Oh, you didn't?
The end of her story.
The end of what I'm talking about
great-grandmother. Yeah. About
188?
Yeah, I think so.
The second paragraph? When she asked what attitude you carry deep inside?
Roger, is the paragraph
she named?
That, and when she asks what attitude you carry deep inside, you knew she cared deeply. Is that the paragraph you're referring to?
I may be wrong. It may not be the end paragraph.
Okay.
But it's a paragraph near the end.
Can you give a little bit of guidance which what it might have said?
That we already are what we want to become.
It's talking about great-grandmother.
Oh, let's see. Joshua of the Bible commanded others to hear their words or calling of God, which is what great-grandmother did. In teaching others to be themselves and live their greatest shaman self, they already are. And she called you by name to carry on. So are you willing to answer?
No, nothing.
That's Joshua. That's that Joshua.
Okay. I'm not sure which. Yeah, she's mentioned throughout, like she called him by name.
And grandmother would declare, that's because you don't even believe your own words. You're just bragging. And you hope that if you said it enough, in one drop after another, others would believe you. But you didn't believe it either because you never lived your own words. You just said them and hoped others would accept
that. The same way with your declaration. You don't believe your words, so you don't live them. You just say them.
Talking about we don't do it, like
a waste of time, and you keep repeating it over and over and over again. But you don't live it.
Like the dying words of your friend.
Why don't you put the fan over there so she gets some and I get some?
Happy to do that for you.
Shall we go on?
I guess.
Everybody ready to go on? Anybody want to read 34?
Mm-hmm.
great big no for me.
Okay.
Karen said she read.
Who feels called to read?
Karen has just called herself.
The Smike?
Very good. Smike.
I don't know.
It's over there.
Yep. That's the one.
34. Previously, we suggested you write letters to your eternal self and answer them. Now we are suggesting you deliver a letter.
Are you speaking into mic?
Nope.
I'll turn you up. Yeah. Open it as an eternal being and discuss it with yourself as
sorry,
a person being.
Sorry, Karen. You start from the beginning. Kind of missed it.
You have some feedback.
Yeah, there's a bit of a buzz there now. Previously, we suggested you write letters to your eternal self and answer them. Now we are suggesting you deliver a letter. Open it as an eternal being and discuss it with yourself as a personal being. This will enable you to see, participate in, and understand yourself and events and actions from a personal perspective and from an eternal perspective. And will help you observe and understand and others as personal and others as personal and eternal beings as well. 35. In the past, you chose to have an intimate relationship with your eternal self. And then, believe it or not, you abandoned your eternal self for a physical and mental concubinage?
What does that mean?
A kept person.
The kept person.
A kept toy person.
In prison or something?
Like a mistress.
Nothing to happen.
Believe it or not, mostly you abandoned your eternal self for a physical and mental concubinage. And you have struggled with that choice ever since. For, in abandoning your eternal self for another, you also abandoned your being the reason you had an awarefully intimate relationship with your eternal self. Reconsider these things from the past. Was that a wise choice? 36. Can you see in this that being the reason you have an intimate relationship with your eternal self is far greater than the relationship itself? 37. Is it possible that having a desire is, to you, greater than fulfilling the desire? That a concept is greater than experiencing or substantiating the concept? Is a truth greater than demonstrating the truth of a truth? Put all of this together and ask yourself, is it possible that who I think I am or want to be is far greater than who I am? Maybe you don't think enough of yourself. Is that possible? Are you willing to think far more of yourself than who you are today, or who you can demonstrate and substantiate you are at this moment? Do you think it is possible to get around who you are today, who you can validate and support to awaken and enliven even more than the eternal being you sense you are? 36. Do you think it is possible to get around who you are today, so avoid it? Is that what it's saying?
Roger.
What?
She asked you a question.
The sentence is, do you think it is possible to get around who you are today, who you can validate and support to awaken and enliven even more than the eternal being you sense you are? So, do you think it is possible to
get around? Can you awaken yourself and demonstrate yourself to be greater than you are.
Yeah.
So getting around who I am today is my...
It's going beyond who you are.
Yeah. Okay. 38.
Yeah, okay, but you don't understand what I asked.
Okay, ask me again.
Can you demonstrate yourself to get around who you think you are?
Demonstrate myself. To get around who I think I am.
To be demonstrate yourself as greater than you are.
Can I demonstrate myself as greater than I am?
Talk about it.
Yeah. Well, demonstrate myself. Is that not what we're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's what the paragraph is.
Okay, yep. Getting around trying, avoiding, or not even avoiding, losing the whole trying.
I said getting around or getting over or beyond who you are.
And then...
Yeah.
And be my greater self.
Can you be greater than you are?
Yes.
How do you do that?
You be that.
Chop wood.
Yeah.
Be the eternal emergent being.
And if you be that, isn't that getting beyond yourself?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The self that you think you are.
Mm-hmm. I believe so. Want to carry on?
Whatever.
38. Haven't you always sensed and thought you and your life were far more than what you were being and living as you were told?
Well, there's a question you can answer.
Yes.
Yes.
And what do you want to do about that? And what was that?
Do it.
See, your problem is you're thinking of how do you do extraordinary things? And I'm saying you do extraordinary things like the kids, the third child, certain grandchild. You just do it in ordinary things that you do.
So that's a really clear parallel here, 38, with the...
Everything is a clear parallel
with the story. Yeah.
But you're looking for a direct statement.
Like the first two sons thought they had to find something great, and they walked. And
so
they,
do you.
Hmm? Yes. And checked and see what might be that greatness is. Looking for it. Yeah.
Number 39. Are you willing to get around who you are today and all you have experienced over and over to be and relive what you abandoned a long time ago and experience a great deal of what you have not been aware of since then? This is what emergent life is all about.
Make it up and make it real.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the third son did.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then Prude told great grandfather to prove me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that. It's subtle, but it's so right there in your face. Yeah. Here's the skin. You go count them. You tell me I'm wrong.
Are you willing to make positive statements? You see why everything I write is a declaration? You're making a positive statement in everything. What you do with language is you make wishy-washy statements. There are no declarations. They're just ending. And start over again. Okay, well, let's end and start over again.
Okay, number 40.
Then what? Declare.
Declare and live the eternal self you truly desire and your usual way of life. And it will be that for you.
Okay. Make it so.
Mm-hmm.
What was that on? That was on that.
Why is that so?
Next generation. Make it so.
Why is that so?
Why is it so?
Yes.
Because it is what you're living. You have to live every part of it.
So, and if you live it, then that's obviously so.
Yep. So, Roger, we're having a conversation about any of this stuff, and I make a declarative statement about what I think, and it doesn't jive with the things you've written, but I'm making a declarative statement. How do you expect to interact with me when I'm doing that? Would you be...
If you're living that declared statement, okay, we'll interact with you on that basis.
Okay.
But if you're just making a statement, you're obviously not living it, and you guys don't understand that.
Yeah.
That everything you say after that contradicts what you just said. So you're obviously not living it.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
So I don't accept it.
You shouldn't accept it.
I keep telling you, you don't realize where the second sentence contradicts the first.
Correct.
Yeah. We'll click on to the next thing.
Okay, are we reading the next section? Or are we taking a break? What are we doing, guys?
What's next?
It's called Chronicles of Emergent Life, Part 1, page 193.
Which much of which is a repeat of your eternal religion.
Oh, is it really?
What comes after Chronicles?
Huh?
What comes after Chronicles?
After all the Chronicles? Abiding Being.
Is that new stuff?
Go there.
What do Abiding Being? Yeah.
Wait, Misty, why was it done purposely, just so I know?
Because what? It's so important.
Yeah, drill it in, okay. Drill it in.
Because I was developing a picture.
Yeah.
Right.
So what page?
So we put it in order.
287.
And she read it after typing it and rearranged things.
Oh, okay.
I had them in one order and she picked a different order.
Okay.
Which I left it in a different order.
Okay. So we're skipping Chronicles of Emergent Life Part 2 as well.
We're just
okay.
Skipping ahead.
All right.
See if you can
come back if we have time.
Sure.
See if you can carry on.
Hi. Great strategy.
287. Abiding Beings.
Okay.
Is that where I should be?
Abiding Beings.
Overture, yes.
Overture.
Okay.
Just stop the tape and start anew. Stop the recording starting now, if you would, for a second.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hold.
Just hold for a second. It just takes me a second.
Stand up for a second. Do you want to stand up for a second, Roger?